The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
This is enough to make me roll my R's for the rambunctious Frank Cutolo on Cutolo Chronicles every Thursday. I know I'm tuning in. Are you tuning in? Let's all tune in. Let's tune right now. He drives me crazy with the talking and the talking and the talking. And I'm going to jump out the window. You'll find me in Tijuana. And this is me sober.
Okay, here we go. Listening to Frank Cutolo.
Don't touch me. Hey, Ray. Hey, Sugar. Tell them who we are.
Well, we're big rock singers. We got golden fingers. And we're loved everywhere we go.
That sounds like us.
We sing about beauty and we sing about truth. At $10,000 a show.
Right.
We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills. But the thrill we've never known. It's a thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Yeah.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone?
That's a very, very good idea.
I got a freaky old lady named a Cocaine Kitty who embroiders on my jeans. I got my poor old gray-haired daddy driving my limousine.
Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown. Not the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Gonna see our pictures on the cover. Gonna buy 5 copies for our mother.
Yeah.
Gonna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Teenage blue-eyed groupies who do anything we say. We got a genuine Indian guru. He's teaching us a better way. We got all the friends that money can buy, so we never have to be alone. And we keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover? See my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. Gonna see my picture on the cover.
We ain't on the cover, baby.
5 copies for my mother's.
Gonna
see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Right up front, man. I can see it now. Could be out front smiling, man.
What are you joking me? The bard of the interweb is now presuming it's taken over the cyber waves. I am here. The Bard of Broadcasting, the man they will be talking about for eons. The Vegetable Man, the Third Man. The most fascinating godfather of internet talk radio, all of internet radio. It's me, Francatolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. We're chronicling a little bit different than we planned, but, you know, things happen and we adjust. Come on in. Wake up, it's night. Come on. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello. I welcome you to another evening, unless you're listening in the afternoon, lifelike. Another evening, another afternoon, another 2 hours of, you fill that in, okay? You fill in that noun. I'm not gonna fill. You fill in that noun there. My name is Frank Tolman. Don't forget what I'm talking about. And I decided in the last minute, you know, I have to make a lot of decisions and quick decisions. I have to be a man of resolve and quick on my feet, which is a weird way to say I have to be quick on my feet when I can't even find the phrase that describes me as quick on my feet. But I have to be quick on my feet because things are always happening. Things are always changing. It's just life. The eternal now is filled with surprises. If you got the promotion of this show, for this show, through the various means that are afforded us, you were probably listening and waiting for the wonderful Kenneth Welsh. Now, Kenneth Welsh has been on this show before, but he was going to be on this show solo. He's never been on the show on a panel. Once in a while, we have a panel. And he was here and had to leave. And then he was supposed to be on, but then he had to go to Georgia to be in a movie or television series or a television movie or a movie series or whatever. And then he came back and promised to be here tonight. But something happened. We wish him the best. He's just a little under the weather. And he was sweet enough to say, you know, I'll come on, but I'm warning you, I'm not feeling well. And no. To quote another great actor who has not been on the show, I said, no, that's not going to happen. All right. I had a number of things that I could easily cover for this show, which I was going to do anyway. And those things are in, and that one particular thing is in the general description of what we were going to try to do here on this show, Y2K plus 17 on this November of something, 16th. And we're going to do that anyway. We're going to talk about that stuff and we'll just talk about it a little bit more and do whatever more we need to do to it. Kenneth Welsh will be back. Maybe next week, although next week I believe is our, next week is our Thanksgiving show. If that goes off without a catch, without a niche, without a cripple, without a ripple, without a nipple, then we'll be fine. But maybe he'll come on. Maybe he doesn't do a lot. Well, you know what? He's Canadian, and it's not Thanksgiving in Canada. So maybe he'll have part of your digestion for the day if you do this Thanksgiving thing and eat a lot of food and, get down tonight. Then you'll be here, and Kenneth will be here. Hopefully, he'll be feeling better. I don't allow a man 8 years my senior, who's not feeling well, I don't want to give him the pressure of being here on the show. I want him to be full of his own help. And wake up, it's night, you know, for whatever time we have. So, what I did was, I'm planning as I go along, of course, and I said, what about the collage? Since I'm going to talk to you about something that no one else is going to talk to you about, and again, this is why this show has been sparklingly, I can't even make up a word, why it has been stunningly unique throughout the years. All right, 13 years on SRM Media Work through their particular machinery and at 148.ca/Frank and the other places that are slashed there. 13 years I have been there, and then before that on Amcast.com, even if for Amcast.com folded. And in all those years, I've been here. So I put together what I thought would be, I'm going to talk to you about something again. All those years, there was so many things no one talked about or talked about later on. And I don't want to sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but nobody does this show the credit. Now, I shouldn't say nobody. There are a lot of people who say wonderful things. And I don't really care if you say wonderful things, but I do like to get the credit because I am the godfather of internet talk radio and maybe even internet radio. No, not really. But, you know, you know what I'm saying. Because if you come here, you expect this. Just like Dee said, the talking and the talking and the drinking. Get yourself a beverage or three beverages, as the case may be. But so I'm going to talk to you about that. So what I decided to do in the collage, I said, well, you know what? Since I'm going to talk about the Rolling Stone in context with something that maybe nobody realizes at this point, because there are a lot of listeners who weren't here for the longest time. I'm going to go back to like the beginning of the millennium here and talk about stuff and people that have to do with this subject. So I figure like, well, let me talk about this thing, the Jan Wenner biography. I'm going to go through it with you and I'm going to explain all these things as we go along. So stay here. Don't go away. And then if we have time, we'll look into, I don't know how we're going to look into this. I have no idea, but I'll just tell you this right now. It is National Philosophy Week. I believe it was last Thursday to this Thursday, or maybe it was last Thursday and now it's, or is it today? Or, and when you know, the days get all scrambled and mixed up anyway, because you listen to this show on the live stream, which happens on Thursday nights in the continent of North America, in the continent of Europe and Great Britain. Don't mix those two up. It is the next day. And then beyond that, I don't know if it can get to be 2 days, but if you're down under, it's a morning show. And I don't know how you're eating your breakfast with this. I don't even know what they eat for breakfast in Kangaroo Land. Is that bad calling it Kangaroo Land? I just think of kangaroos. Timey kangaroo down, sport with timey kangaroo. You know, that stuff, Crocodile Dundee and all that. And then down under and Australians. I know Australians. I know New Zealanders. How about that? Do you? No. Is this a contest? No, it's not. Okay. So I decided to play the cover of the Rolling Stones, Stone, which is Dr. Tube and his whiskey band. You know what? I forgot. It's Dr. Hook and his medicine band. I think it was medicine band. I have no idea. I just remember this came out, when it came out, and I remember what it was all about. And I remember knowing what a lot of people didn't know, and that was the author, a man named the ill-fated. And that's a nice way of saying the now deceased, which is a nice way of saying the dead. There's a couple of nice ways of saying that, as it turns out. Shel Silverstein, who I admired and followed through many of his endeavors when he was alive. Shel Silverstein, if you don't know that name, you might want to look it up. Go to your Wikipedia, go to your YouTube or your his Hulu tube or whatever the hell else you got there, and look it up. He wrote a lot of funny songs, and he wrote books for children, books for adults, and books for children that could be read by adults. And he was a great guy and a very creative guy and original guy. So I said, why don't I play Shel Silverstein's song, Cover of the Rolling Stone, done by Dr. Hook and his medicine bop, thing bop band, or whoever the hell. I have no idea. It was something with medicine. Dr. Hook and his way out medicine Caribbean. I don't know. I got the name. Do I have the name? I would love to just be able to pull out the name. What was it? Something Biafra and Joe? Anyway, the best name for a group I ever heard, which I talked about. I don't even know when. This stuff is not cataloged in a certain way or any way. So, but you can hear in chronological order the the show and download things for free at juicedtalk.com and stream them, download them, wherever you want. Or and another thing, we endorse the proposition that you listen to it on other stations, because it is on other stations. You could Google it, you could Hulu it, you could not Hulu's not a search Zulu. Put a spider on it and look through the darn thing and find out where it's on. Like for instance, True Talk Radio. This is the one I remember the most because they play us the most twice a day during weekdays. And I think it's the latest show, and once in a while they put another one in. I don't know. It's just timeless. Most of what we're talking about can be talked about or listened to throughout the history of mankind from here on in. So there you go. That can be done. But I wanted to play Cover the Rolling Stone because I was going – one of the things I was going to do, even if Mr. Welch was here, was talk about this whole Rolling Stone thing. And I think – that, and I, and now there was other stuff I could have done and I haven't done it, because there was just too much to do, and I could not stop and then suddenly devote myself to this show. Just like you shouldn't do if you're sitting and listening to it. If you have to go, go. If you have to get something to drink, and go. Someone comes over and you haven't seen that person in a while, or you have seen that person like recently, but you want to see them again and would rather spend time with them, do it. Okay, there's plenty of ways to hear the show, and there's plenty of reasons not to listen at all. And I understand all of them. So, we will move on. And now, we can go on with it. As the cover of the Rolling Stone, so I remember when they came out, of a lot of particular connections to that era, and Shel Silverstein. I'm going to let you look up Shel Silverstein. Unless I decide to, you know, find something on YouTube and play it in the meantime, in between time. And we got fun. Point of the matter is, my name is Frank Cotullo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. I'm here again. This is a third week I've done a drum solo show. A drum solo show is where I do this show alone with no co-host, no co-star, no one on Skype. Now, speaking of that, last week, the lovely famous model, Mikel. I immediately went to the Russian name, Mikel von Isenberg, just called up out of nowhere on Skype and talked to us and said she's going to do a segment on this show, and we're going to have a feature segment. Now, I never said that segment was going to start this week, next week, or it would always be here. Because I don't commit to things like that, neither do the people who are involved with me in this show. They're smart enough not to do that. Because anything can happen in this eternal now that is Cotullo Chronicles. And your life, too. I'm not saying I'm, you know, more important, because I'm not. But so where's Miquette? Now, so I'm supposed to talk to Miquette between now and the last time she was here, the most recent time she was here. I can't say last time because that means something entirely different. And she did not show up. We weren't able to talk because she's got a life to lead and things are going on. And you know, she might even call in. We don't know where Miquette is located at this moment. But we will try to handle that. And if she is here, then we'll put her on and she'll talk about something. Including what we're talking about tonight. Who knows? Because, you know, this is another person who, in my travels through the world, if I just want to bring this up again, only because why not, right? Miquette and I probably brushed shoulders here and there throughout our professional careers, but did not brush them closely enough. Is that what they mean? To brush shoulders doesn't mean, it means you come in proximity to another thing or person, right? It doesn't mean you literally brush shoulders. Nobody brushes their shoulders anyway. You brush your hair, you brush your dog, you brush your dog's hair. But you don't brush shoulders. Nobody brushes shoulders unless they're what was the name of that gorilla? The one who, did you see the gorilla on television? I saw a gorilla who was sitting with a man. I swear this was not made up, not fake, not photoshopped or, you know, media, Windows meteorized or whatever it is you do when you do special effects that could never be done anywhere else and now could be done in your own home or on your phone. It was a gorilla, full grown gorilla, was sitting with a guy, and the guy had his, either had a cell phone or he had an iPad or an iTablet or something. And he was looking at stuff with looking at pictures with the gorilla looking over his shoulder, and the gorilla literally, this is what happened. The gorilla took his finger. Maybe it was a her. I don't know if it was his or her. I don't know his or her gorilla. The gorilla took its finger and began to swipe. Saw the man swiping and swiped. And they were looking at pictures, and the gorilla was deciding which picture to watch. Now, I'm saying to myself, I'm going to assume this is real. It looks real. It smells real. It tastes real. And I'm saying, let's just assume it's real, because sometimes you have to do that. And if it was fake, let's assume that it was fake. Let's assume that it was, it could be real. Okay. Because you got to do things like that with life and your mind and your brain and your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions, which are your feelings. So I'm going, how could this guy not be scared out of his own skin? This gorilla, let me tell you something about gorillas. If you don't know, they're large and powerful. Okay. And if this gorilla who is swiping this little with a finger gently, didn't destroy or crack the, or dismantle the motherboard, on the phone. Okay, on the device, let's just call it a device. He didn't do that. She didn't do that. Whatever sex it was didn't do that. It was just being done gently. But this gorilla could have taken that finger. This is how I think. Now, I don't know if you people think like that. I mean, some people think like this. I'm not the only person to think like one way. But I'm thinking to myself, that gorilla could take that finger, decide to not swipe gently, but take the finger and put it into the eye of the fellow, right? Right into it. The eye, pushing the eye back into the, where does an eye go? It doesn't touch the brain. Your eye can't touch the brain, but pushing the eye all the way back into the head. That is your part of your skull. I don't know where that, can an eye, if you push an eye in hard enough, does it touch, can it touch the brain? The point is, this gorilla is so strong, it could do that. It could push the, let's forget about it goes to the brain. Let's say it doesn't go to the brain. Let's assume it doesn't go to the brain if you push the eye in all the way. Pushes the eye in so strongly, and it's nothing to the gorilla. The gorilla is nothing. So strongly that the finger of the gorilla can go right through the back of the skull. And the man will not have much of a life left as he knew it. Right. And I'm going, and I know it's terrible to think like that. But if I don't, I think that in the first place, that particular scenario might not come to mind exactly. If someone said, sit with the gorilla with your smartphone. Okay. Let the gorilla swipe some pictures. Let the gorilla just look for his own pictures or her own pictures or its own pictures. Okay. And I don't think I would have said, you know what? That's a good idea. I'd really like to share this experience with a 700-pound gorilla. And you know what? That 700 pounds is an estimation. It might even be a conservative estimation. I have no idea. I do have a little coffee left, though, so. It's kind of brightly, kind of not that warm. But I've had two cups, so it's okay. I'm going to go through this. That way I won't get dehydrated, but at the same time, I won't have to, like, run off to the bathroom and leave you with a song or something. Although I could find a song if I had to do that. So that was a fascinating thing I saw. And what does that have to do with anything we're talking about? It has everything to do with everything we're talking about. Anything that comes out of the original thought is somehow connected to the original thought. Just the way the brain works. So I decided to play the cover of the Rolling Stone because we're going to talk about Rolling Stone. Here's what I'm going to do. And we'll do it. And then when it's done, it's done. But as I was saying, I did not go into the annals or archives of this show to find specific clips. I was going to do that, but I couldn't do it. I'll tell you instead. You'll understand it. And this will be a testimony to, speaking of people who passed away, to somebody who not only assisted this show in being any kind of success at all in audience, but also helped to break the barrier that once existed in terms of people in regular media, you know what I'm saying? Movies, TV, radio, the other side. People who were celebrated in that area did not want to be a part of this area. I've talked about this 100 times. I'm not going to start screaming at these people anyway. I'm just going to tell you that who was the instrumental person, the person who allowed this all to start, is also the true creator of Rolling Stone magazine, in a sense. And I'm going to explain all that to you. He's been a great friend of this show. And when he was in dire help, we did all we could to help get money to keep him going as much as he could going. But he was ill-fated based on an accident he had a long time ago, before he met us and before he put out the word that Cthulhu Chronicles was one hell of a show and was the future then. Okay? So this man, we're going to talk about, but here's what I'm going to do first. I'm going to look at read along with you, because I haven't done this, a magazine article to prove something. I believe I'm going to prove it. Okay. And that is a magazine I tell you all about here once in a while. No, you're going to go, what? Entertainment Weekly? What? Popular Mechanics? No, neither. Vanity Fair. And again, I don't know. What is this? Condé Nast, number 687. I have no idea. You do the math. Tell me how many months that is in math. Oh, here it is. November 2017. So this is good. This is a November issue. Okay. In this issue is a article about Jan. I'm going to make sure I say his name correctly. Winner. Yes, Jan Winner. Jan Winner. I'll tell you something about Jan Winner. He is credited with starting Rolling Stone magazine. And rightfully so. He did start Rolling Stone magazine. But Jan Winner, we knew that before, or what? So what? Well, here's so what. Rolling Stone magazine now on the auction block. No, it's not an auction block, but it's for sale. Why? Because we've talked about this. I don't know how many times, because I don't count. Maybe you do. And that is the, I'm looking for the word, the extinction of print magazines. Print magazines, which there's still tons of them out there. Okay, but they all have companions on the web. They all have various ways of getting to people that are incorporated into the new platform, the digital platform for reading, just like newspapers, you know. Some magazines still exist, but they do at a very, most of them have crapped out. And Rolling Stone, of course, as a cultural publication that used to come out every 2 weeks and still did, I think, through its history. But, okay, let me tell you something. Get back to this. Jan, which is John, Jan, you can't say Jan because it's J-A-N-N and we'll learn a little bit about, although we're not going to learn a lot more about him. Okay, so here are the two reasons. Number one, Rolling Stone up for sale. Gone. It's going to go. Somebody's either going to buy it and make it into. Remember what they did to MySpace? No, not MySpace. To MP3.com. They took MP3.com. Once it was scourged. Scourged? It was the scourge of independent music. And then it started sharing music that was copyright. And that's, of course, when we came around. And that was that whole litigation between copyright and songs and the ASCAP and BMI and the international song people. And, you know, and everybody who was going, like, we're not going to have a living anymore. And they don't anyway, because the whole platform has changed and hurt everyone. But, okay, so magazines, you know, magazines, music, everything, you know, it's all gone, you know. We said that would happen too. But a lot of people, the number of people listening now and who are attached to listening to shows like mine, not that there are any like mine, but very much, you know, talk on the interweb, are, okay, so that's stuff. Anyway, this magazine, Jan Wenner has that up for sale. I don't even know. Maybe he doesn't own it. I have no idea. I'm sure he owns a lot of it. I don't know a lot about him, but there's the rub. Not knowing about him, while it's going up for sale, he has released a, what? I don't know if it's an auto or just a biography. Here it is. It says here, and let me read to you. This is coming from Vanity Fair magazine, one of the magazines that is online and also can support itself as a analog magazine because it has the most expensive ads in the world for the most expensive things in the world. For instance, here, how about this? Tom Ford, what? Anthrax City, what is this? Perfume. Tom Ford, Anthrax, Neiman Marcus. You know, when I say these names, you're talking, you know, well, you know, I could just rip this open and you know these ads where you rip them open and you smell? Oh, jeez, that, you smell, wow, that's a boof. Is that what he smells like? I'm sorry, I don't want that. But there's also, you know, like this here, a movie, you know, like TV things, like series, like Graves. I never even heard of this. Nick Nolte and Cela Ward, season premiere, Graves on Epics. Yeah, I don't even know these. Berlin Station, season premiere. These TV shows, I have no idea. Okay, how about watches? A lot of perfumes and, Celine. This ad must cost $1 billion. It's just a beautiful legs and a girl holding a, pocketbook. It says Celine on the bottom. She's got, I don't know. I mean, these are like expensive things. Woman by Ralph Lauren. Okay. Woman by Ralph. This smells too, but not like, and then three pages. Okay. Oh, look at this. Imperio Armani. Watches that cost more than your car. All right. In any event, in this event, and certainly all events, it's out of order. No, you're out of order. So, in this magazine, on one of these promo pieces, which magazines still do, and newspapers do, and TV shows. You know, you watch those late night shows, and people come on. Like last night, I think I was watching only because I very rarely see Gary Oldham, who's a really good actor. Very rarely see him. And I was fascinated because I just happened to have this Fallon show on at a good night show, the Tonight Show. And there's Gary Oldman. And this is like a remark. One of those actors, like, boy, he should have won like 3 Academy Awards already, but you know, no one cares. So he's playing Winston. I was going to say William. Winston Churchill. Gee, now it's getting warm, so you have to take. Oh, hold on there. Whoa. What happened? My headphones did a weird thing because I had to take this top off, and it took. You know what it did is I was going to take the sweatshirt off, and it was, the wire was hooked up in the middle of it. What do I do with this, huh? Yeah, put it over there. I'm going to give it to somebody, because there is nobody, it's just me. So, I just happened to turn there, and he's playing Winston Churchill, and I think it's a movie. You know, you don't know anymore, because and it could be a movie, but it used to be like, well, look, there's theater movies and there's TV movies. Now, there's Hulu movies and YouTube movies, and there's Netflix movies, and there's Blockbuster movies, and, well, you know, all sorts of stuff. Who knows? So I wanted to watch him and see that there. But why did I bring that up? Because everything that comes from the main thought is indeed related. Jan Wenner. Don't say Jan, because that's not Jan. Jan. It's the other N. J-A-N-N. I don't know. Like I said. Okay, so it says here in Vanity Fair, before you even get to the article, which we're going to go through just a little bit of time so I could tell you exactly what they're not telling you, which you won't hear in any other show. This is the first time Jan Wenner put John Lennon and Yoko Ono on the cover of Rolling Stone. Hey, remember the song? Covered Rolling Stone. Okay. That was 1968. He was propping up his fledgling publication. His fledgling publication, 1968. The second time he did that, in 1981, he was sealing legend, Lennon's legend. Well, you know how I feel about saying legend, so I'm not going to say that. Okay, in an adaptation from a biography of Rolling Stones founder, that's what they're playing, that's what they published, and an adaptation from a biography of Rolling Stones founder, Jan Wenner, with the magazine up for sale, Joe Hagen, he's the guy who wrote this, Chronicles, hey, Chronicles, everybody uses that word. You know, I started using that, again, I'm not saying I'm the first person to use it, but when I said I want to call this Cthulhu Chronicles, when I told the Waskowitches over there at Amcast, I said, I go call it Cthulhu Chronicles, but it doesn't mean they're the Chronicles of Cthulhu, right? It's not like Chronicles of Riddick is our Chronicles of Riddick. And these are Chronicles. This is me chronicling. Okay, and talk about all this stuff. Okay, but it says here that he chronicles the relationship between Wenner and Lennon, a decade of ambition, betrayal, and worship that made rock and roll history. Okay, so we're not going to talk about his relationship between Lennon and men, because that's like none of, not only is it none of our business, but it's really not, you know, go read the book if you want to read about that stuff. The fact that, you know, it happened there. But here's a fledgling publication in 1968. Okay. Where did he get this idea? What happened? Why did he suddenly decide that the culture of rock and roll was becoming so prevalent to the generation at hand there, that he would be able to make this magazine worthy of popular. Let's use the word popular, okay? So this is called the book, and I'm not promoting, I haven't read it. I'm just going to tell you the name of the book, title of the book. Now, remember, that was my mother, never said title. So every once in a while I say name instead of, never said title. What's the title of that book? What's the title of that movie? What's the title of that play? No, what was the name of that? Just like it was a brand of ketchup. What's the name of that ketchup? Because you don't say the title of the ketchup, right? Because you don't say the, you know. What's the name of that? What's the name of this? Okay. They adapted. This is adapted, which I means just kind of not ripped off, but, you know, condensed, I guess. You know, like in Reader's Digest. Digested, maybe, perhaps. Adapted from Sticky Fingers, The Life and Times of Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone Magazine by Joe Hagen. So he wrote it, and he did the excerpt here. It's out October 24, 2017 by Alfred Knopf. One of the more difficult words, if you just say it and don't see it spelled, know how to spell. But it's a very famous publication house there. An imprint of the Knopf Doubleday Group. Oh, they've already merged, huh? Knopf and Doubleday go together. For all I know, Knopf came from Doubleday. I don't know that. A division of Penguin. Oh, my good. Penguin Random House. Oh, my gosh. They're all one big, gigantic conglorium. And by conglorium, I mean in a corporation. Conglomerate. But I said conglorium. Don't look it up. It does not exist. Copyright 2017 by the author. This is going to talk about things I don't want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the Lennon thing and what have you. But the magazine cover that he's talking about was, let's see, like, I'm going to look through this here now and then, you know, get to it. They're trying to say that Wenner decided to put John and Yoko on the cover of Rolling Stone and naked from the back because the couple, John and Yoko, had put out an album. You know, he's a vinyl. See, many people know what vinyl is today because they still sell vinyl, even though it's very expensive. They sell vinyl records again, you know. So 1968, He did that, and Rolling Stone interview with John Lennon inside the complete John and Yoko record cover, because they were naked on the cover, and on the back was their backsides naked. See, so he put the backsides on the front, and then the front inside the magazine, so you didn't buy it. And the thing about the Rolling Stone at the time wasn't a magazine that you just open up, and you know, it was almost a multi-tabloid type thing, because it was folded weirdly, and you'd have to open it up and dismantle it. It was, you know, back in those days. That's what it was. But Rolling Stone has struggled. Here it is. Dear John. Okay, Rolling Stone has struggled in the past few years. Let's look at this like right now, and then I will backtrack and talk to you about where this, unless, and I don't think this is going to be mentioned in here, and I haven't even mentioned his name yet, what we are going to, and very humbly and with respect. Here goes. Rolling Stone has struggled in the past few years with the new economics of publishing, as well as the damaging scandal involving a story about a purported gang rape at the University of Virginia. Now, you might remember that. I think we talked about that maybe when it happened a couple of, I don't know, was that a year ago or something? We might have talked about it. Okay, so the magazine's been struggling. Mostly, I mean, okay, I mean, I understand that there was a problem about people making up news or what have you that has to do with the gang rape, which was fake sources or whatever. But it's mostly the damaging scam. I'm not forgetting. No, it's mostly the new economics of publishing. Let's say that because that's truly what's killing them all. Okay. In mid-September, approaching the magazine's 50th anniversary, Wenner put Rolling Stone up for sale. But it's hard to overestimate Rolling Stone's cultural influence over the past decades. And Wenner's youthful obsession with John Lennon was at the core. So now we're going to, the book's going to tell you this stuff about him and his obsession of John Lennon. The timing of Wenner's relationship with Lennon had been fortuitous from the start. Okay, Lennon met Yoko, ba-ba-da-bing, boo-boo-boo, ba-ba-ba, and then in London, previously 1 year to the week before Rolling Stone published its first issue. The emergence of a credible and well-read American rock and roll newspaper, highly coveted copies of which were already being passed around in London in early 1968, tracked precisely with the erosion of the Beatles. Lennon wanted to wrest control of his media image from the tyranny of the mop-top machine, and he saw Rolling Stone as an opportunity. Indeed, in his... Okay, look, look, okay, here, look, okay, 1968... Rolling Stone. Wenner is getting involved with Lennon. But where was Wenner from? I haven't heard the name yet that I'm waiting to read in this. Because it's making it like, well, you know, Wenner started this Rolling Stone magazine and all of a sudden, people were really getting into it. They're going, hey, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? Hey, got all, you know, and then there's Lennon who wants to attach himself to it. Okay, fine and wonderful. Wenner had evidently named his magazine after the Rolling Stones. Rolling Stone decided that they were going to call the magazine Rolling Stone because of their respect for Mick Jagger, which didn't make John Lennon happy, said Yoko Ono, now 930 or however old she might be. It wasn't exactly true. The Bob Dylan song was the actual inspiration, but Wenner was only too happy to serve. We were, quote, we were a full forum for John and Yoko, he said. Anything they said, we printed. It began when Capitol Records rejected John and Yoko's infamous Two Virgins album. That's the name of the album. It's called Two Virgins. Which, and it was just, you know, artistic performance art, screaming and noise and stuff. It was just, you know, stuff. What to say? All right. The Two Virgins album of the couple naked and homogeneous. Encouraged by Ralph Gleason, jazz critic and Rolling Stone co-founder. Ralph Gleason, was he one of the guys who found Dylan? No, that was someone else. That was a weird sound. That one clipped. Anyway, Ralph Gleason was the co-founder. Wenner sent a telegram to Derek Taylor, the Beatles press secretary. Wenner wanted Lennon to... So anyway, they got this thing and they put it up there. The point is, Wenner wrote in his next editorial, print a famous foreskin and the world will be the path to your door. For Wenner, controversy was the point of any story. And Lennon got the intended results too. And the other Beatles were pissed off by the Two Virgins cover, which put the band on notice that Lennon was carving a new path with his girlfriend. George Harrison was going, what is this thing? He said, what is this thing? recalled Yoko Ono. Paul was very forward. He said, don't do this. And John loved it, of course, because he was just flying out on his own there. Before long, Wenner was invited to Lennon's British country estate in Ascot. And then also, throughout the early years of Rolling Stone, Wenner was happy to run Lennon's unedited missives on macrobiotics and rock festival controversies, and he worked hand in glove with Derek Taylor of Apple Records, a de facto bureau for Rolling Stone, offering to publish the PR man's, that was a PR man, Derek, own stories about the Beatles, blah, 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 blah. 1970 was a hinge year for the history of Rolling Stone, the precarious leap from the revolutionary 60s to the commercialized 70s. After Altamont and Kent State, the rock and roll industry had powered Rolling Stone had begun decoupling the counterculture. After the bloodletting of 1970, the magazine nearly went bankrupt and Wenner purged his staff. Now, I don't know how far the John Lennon interview, let's see how far I'm going to go with this, because this only goes up to where? The other two pages. I'm not going to read all this junk. I'm going to look through it here and look for one name. One name. I see a lot of names that have to do with, you know, rock and roll in those days and, you know, power names, big time guys and gals. I don't know if there are gals here. I see that, but you know what I don't see? I don't see a name. I'm looking for a name here. A name of someone who might have ever, someone here. No, I don't see it. I'm going through the, you know why? Because this starts in, this begins, this whole thing, I guess, I don't know, the book, I guess, has some things about his childhood and whatever, I don't know, must, right? It's a biography. I gotta tell you where he came from. To tell you more about, I think Ralph Gleason is mentioned, but that's cute. He came along with, okay, and then this I'm going through now, 1974, no, we're not that, that's it. And then goes, continued on page what? 166. This adaptation from the guy who wrote the book, Sticky Fingers, 166 is where, 57. Now these are so small, these Atlantis. Oh look, there's a picture of the Daily News, 7 cents. Convicted murderer Ricky Robles in 1965. The Daily News in New York cost 7 cents. I remember that. That's career. Where is it? 66. Here goes. Oh, and then it goes on another 2 pages. So I have to look for this name. Don't see any name now because I'm... There's McCartney and there's this and there's that and there's Paul Gambaccini and Ralph Gleason and Polaroid. I'm seeing all these names everyone knows. May Pang, of course, who was Lennon when he ran off to Harry Nielsen's house, and then and this is it, and this is going on and on and on. Rolling Stone, and then of course to Lennon's murder, Annie Leibovitz who took the pictures of her and this and that, and then the last pictures and Chapman and this and that and the other thing, and 10 years, 6 months, and 272 issues of Rolling Stone separated Jan Wenner and John Lennon from the movie theater in San Francisco the day Lennon wept seeing Paul McCartney sing from the roof of Apple Records. I didn't read you that part because who cares, right? Maybe you do. Go get the book. Okay. Wenner stayed up all night and phoned, but don't phone. David Geffen is involved. There's another big name. I see a name there. I don't see the name I want to see as I'm moving along here. There's Morono, there's Wenner, there's John Kennedy, his name is there, Jack Kennedy's name is here, and Leibovitz again, and then moving on to the last half page of this, Sean Lennon and, and that's it. So just as I thought, the name I'm looking to find is not here. Jan Wenner. Perhaps, now to be fair to the book, because I haven't read the book, and like I said, this got to be, the name I'm going to tell you has got to be in that book. I'm going to tell you that name. But first, I'm going to remind you that if you're listening live, I know you're alive, if you're listening on the live stream, right after this broadcast, another minute, Well, that was quick math that just meant nothing. Another 1 hour and 10 minutes of the show. You will be listening immediately following this show, Mr. Tom Savino. Savino Veritas. In truth, in wine truth. Oh God, the slogans, the things, the phrases, the stuff that goes on there. More than that, I cannot say. terrific show that follows this show on Thursday nights. Now, if, again, you are listening on the lifelike plane, that would mean, of course, that you're not listening to the live stream. You're listening to another stream onto another station, or you downloaded it or whatever you did to get this show and you're listening right now. Locate your most closest, I don't know, I was going to say closest. Find an internet station. Hey, start one. I don't care. And you can get these shows for free and broadcast them. And to broadcast Tom Savino's show either before or after mine is perfect. Internet alternative. Let's say forget about internet. Alternative broadcasting. You get nothing like it anywhere. So do that. Do that. Now I'm going to go back and tell you what I was talking. There's Savino Veritas. Let me cross that thing out there. Okay. I don't think I did that. Thank you. Tom is great. I mean, this is Shel Silverstein. We didn't do anything. Maybe we'll play a Shel Silverstein piece in the, and when we go to the top of the hour and you could go to the bathroom or do something. You're going to have to look for Shel Silverstein, though. I know you're going, all right, who's that? Here, Shel Silverstein. Look at this. Poems read by Shel Silverstein. Let's just look at Shel Silverstein, see if there's any songs here. Yeah, here's one, but that's Johnny Cash and Shel Silverstein. Did he write A Boy Named Sue? Maybe he did. Here's Shel Silverstein. Ickle Me, Pickle Me. Shel Silverstein singing Show It at the Beach. Wow. I didn't know there was this much here. A peanut butter sandwich? The Unknown? What is this? Oh, wow. Boa Constrictor? Sarah, Cynthia, you know, Unicorn? Crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff, kids. Oh, yeah. Loretta, oh, look at this. Shel Silverstein songs. There's 58 Shel Silverstein songs here. Let me see if I just I pick them. What? Here's One's on the Way. The Good Old Nashville Music. What else is there? There's who else? Who's that? Oh, that's Loretta Lynn, huh? Oh, but that's just her. What is this here? Oh, the Irish Rovers, the Unicorn song, huh? Johnny Cash, 25 Minutes to Go. A Boy Named Sue. He did by, I guess he wrote it. Oh, wow, isn't that so? Waylon Jennings, The Taker, Cover of the Rolling Stones. Steve Goodman, What Have You Done for Me Lately? There's one. Dr. Hook again, Freaking at the Freaker's Ball. The Things I Didn't Say, I don't know. Maybe we'll do that. Oh, look at this one. What's it called? What was that? Cook, eat? What is this? Give me a dose of the one you love most. Rosalie Good Eats Cafe. Freaker's Ball. I don't know. The Mermaid Song. Bobby Bear. Tequila Sheila. You get the hint there? Queen of the Silver Dollar. Okay, fine. There's plenty of those. And maybe if I want to do that, I'll do that. After that, I'm going to tell you. But Jan Wenner gets all the glory. Rolling Stone gets all the glory. And there is not a mention. And again, I didn't see the book, so I don't know anything. And I didn't know this before the appearance of a man named Paul Williams on this show. Paul Williams, R.I.P. He was the first outside source. And by that, I mean person from mainstream anything to be on this show by phone in the very crazy and crummy way we used to do phones in those days. His first appearance was thwarted by our computer, which went down. Poor me, this I was freaking, man. I got all to do to get this guy. And Paul Williams is, if I'm the godfather of internet radio, Paul Williams is the godfather of rock and roll journalism. If there is anything written by anybody in the Rolling Stone magazine, from the very first issue through all those John Lennon things and Leonard, through all of that, anything was influenced by a man named Paul Williams, who started a magazine, yes, before Rolling Stone, and somewhat during it, but he could not keep it going for the money that it cost and for the people that he lost who were originally writing for him. You guessed it. A magazine called Crawdaddy. Crawdaddy was the start of... Now, Crawdaddy has to do with Rolling Stones. It's named after a place where the Rolling Stones used to play. But Mr. Paul Williams still... And I'm sure his estate would be, you know, he still has great books out there that he's written about major rock influences. He's the guy who took rock music, started to take it sort of something he could take seriously and write about as if it was, write about it with the panache of literary criticism and the intelligence of literary criticism. He's the one who looked he took it seriously, took the artist seriously, and he understood the generation, you know, so much. So is a terrible way of putting it, right? He understood them at such a depth that he knew they would be involved in reading this kind of stuff this way. Now, another reason, you talk about John and Yoko? Okay, there's a very famous video for the song Give Peace a Chance when it debuted. And there is, that's when the Lennons, Yoko and John, put themselves in a Montreal hotel room, and they did it was called Sleep In. It was a sleep in for peace. And during that stay, while they were getting all this press and everything, during that stay, they recorded in that room, Give Peace a Chance. And now for those of you who haven't, let's see. Okay. We're going to do it. Yeah. We're going to do it. For those of you who haven't, who don't know or just are heard about it, the original, because you know, you don't have it much. I know that that the original is here, live. Give Peace a Chance live. I don't know if that's it, but there is here it is. Okay. No, we don't want to hear, just the official video, 1969. Okay. All right. I'm going to play some of this for you as we go into the ending of the first hour. And I'm going to come back and talk to you about it. In this video, which you can get on YouTube, it's the original video from 1969. John and Yoko did a sleep-in, and people came up to see them. I won't drop any names here right now, but it's very famous that in that room, when they did Give Peace a Chance, he had a bunch of people, cultural figures here and there, that sang with him. So on that record, when it was recorded, because it's a record that they wrote, are many voices and stuff. Now, one of the people in that room, and you could see him briefly if you see the very famous video, is Paul Williams, not Jan Winter. Now, I don't know. Maybe Jan was there. I don't know that. But I do know, because Paul talked about it when he was here. And I talk more about Paul, more about Crawdaddy, tell you where you could still see Crawdaddy magazines and where you could still get Paul Williams' books and tell you why the shame of Paul Williams' demise, that too. But in the meantime, this is for those of you, because I know there's a lot of you. What was that? A lot of people listening don't really, and I don't have to play the whole thing. You can go and get your, we're gonna play our little thing here where we go, you know, the show, the ID. And then I'm gonna follow that with Give Peace a Chance, and I'm gonna come back and talk about Paul Williams. And I'll give you more information. This is the name you need to look for if you buy or you look through Sticky Fingers. Maybe there's an index and it'll say Paul Williams. This is the man who gave the entire movement that is now being credited to Jan Wenner. I'm not taking anything away from Jan, because he did start Rolling Stone. He did, you know, he did wind up making it successful, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he left. But the man behind him and the man behind the whole foundation of taking rock seriously, which should never have been done anyway. But anyway, that's, you know what I'm saying, is this. Don't go away.
Cthulhu Chronicles, the internet talk show from the neo-postmodern world.
all they're saying. All they're singing. 1969, from a hotel in Montreal. Looking at the video again is fascinating because there's plenty of other people, celebrities, hanging around there. I think I heard this. Yeah, oh, there's Paul. Goodbye. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Yeah, that's it right there. The official video that was made when they recorded it with all the people in the room and with all the people in the room. I noticed, and I hadn't recalled this from the past, but I did see Paul Williams there. If you look at this any number of times, it's like 5 minutes. You'll see a lot of people. By the way, my name is Frank Cotolo. The man's name adorns the title of the show in the second hour of Cotolo Chronicles Y2K Plus 17. Next week, possibly, Mr. Kenneth Welsh will join me in our Thanksgiving show, which we do every year when we say Happy Thanksgiving at night. To so many people around the world who can listen to this show, it's not Thanksgiving. But, you know, the thought is there and the feeling is mutual. Wait a second. I got to write this in. Just write something down here every time I, every time I get an idea and write it down. Okay, who else did I see in there which I'd forgotten about? Tommy Smothers is playing guitar and singing along with them. Tommy Smothers of the Smothers Brothers. Now, you millennials might remember, write down these names and go look for these people and understand their place in pop culture. Because there was a culture that led into the culture that you're thinking and looking at and grooving on and whatever now. Okay? So there's a lot of these people know those people. So I saw Tommy Smothers there. Funny, but not Dickie Smothers. Tommy, the Smothers Brothers, who were, that's a whole nother show, I guess, right? The Smothers Brothers. I saw Timothy Leary, and those of you who have listened through the years may have heard my Timothy Leary story. Timothy was still alive and kicking. He was still alive and tripping at the time, I'm sure, because he did it every day. And I saw Petula Clark there. I don't remember Petula Clark being there, but by shooty, there she was, right there. In Montreal was an interesting place to have it because at the time of the Vietnam War and all the stuff that was going on between the generation, the love generation or whatever you wanted to call them, their drugs, their freedom, their music, and what have you. Yes, it was my generation, but I'm calling them, okay? Their stuff. All that stuff that was going on, kids who were targeted to go into the army in the United States of America, and many number of them left for Canada, left their citizenship and went to Canada so that they did not have to go fight in the war. Gave up their American citizenship and later on were pardoned by, Jimmy Carter, president that I am very happy to say. My brief stint in politics, it's another story. There's story upon story upon story a long time ago. I know everything with you was a long time ago, Frank. Well, because wake up, it's night, my friends. Things are not getting younger. Everything's growing older as we speak. And Lee, my name is Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show, and this show is... Oh, I'm getting rid of this thing. I got to do everything by myself here, so that's why. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and I'm chronicling. And I'm talking about Paul Williams. You don't hear this. You just don't hear this. And like I said, I don't know the book. The book is called Sticky Fingers. It's Jan Wenner and the Rolling Stones, the story of the Rolling Stone and him and John Lennon, blah, blah, blah. But I did not read the book So for all I know, the name Paul Williams is in the index, if there is an index, and is mentioned because he founded rock journalism, as it was called. And he's still known today as the godfather of rock journalism. Whatever, I'm not condoning this or what have you. I did, because I think, that how he dealt with reviews, how he dealt with the music when he wrote about it, no one else was doing that. In fact, Crawdaddy's, one of Crawdaddy, if not Crawdaddy's first issue, may have been a photo of John Lennon. It may have been. I know if I'm confusing it with the Rolling Stone, but I think it was. Crawdaddy was put together nowhere near as professionally. Of course, in those days, I can't describe to you the primitive means of putting out a publication on a shoestring budget and distribution, no money or whatever, no ads, just selling it and getting subscriptions and trying to stay alive. I can't tell you, because now everybody is so entitled to the finest technology. So if you want to do a magazine, it's digital, everything, a click, you learn this, you learn that, another language. But back in those days, it literally had typewriting as typesetting. They didn't even have typesetting. And Paul did remarkable things to make this Crawdaddy magazine readable. Now, if you were to, as I'm going to right now, go to this? And see what, on Wikipedia. Okay, where's, I gotta do all this myself. I gotta move this here and this, that. Let me move this mic over. There you go. There's a sound for you. I gotta go to, Wikipedia. The Wikipedia game? I don't know that now. I just go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia. And if I put in the name, if I put in Crawdaddy, which I'm going to do, English, good God, 5 million articles. I don't even know they have news on here. I don't know they have Wikipedia news. Wikipedia? I used to call it Wicca. Wicca. I never called it Wiki until somebody said it's Wiki. Okay, search. I'm going to put in Crawdaddy Magazine before I put in Crawdaddy Magazine, before I put in Paul Williams. Let's see what it says here. And Peter Nobler. I don't know that name. Paul Williams, editor, founder, Paul Williams. Here's the year, okay? Remember Rolling Stone comes out in 68? Was that what it said on the first, right? It was 68 or 67? 1966 founded. The final issue, 1979, believe it or not, yes. I remember getting the, that's where how I got in touch with Paul, because I was getting the magazine again. So I was doing some reviews and getting paid to do some various journalism. And, of course, I always knew about him. Here you go. Here's what it says here. I'll tell you what I don't know or do know to be true or not true, or what I'm learning here, too. Crawdaddy was an American rock music magazine launched in 1966, created by Paul Williams, a Swarthmore College student at the time of its creation, in response to the increasing sophistication and cultural influence of popular music. He saw it. He said, let's do this, because he's a smart guy. Anybody going to Swarthmore was smart. The magazine was named after the Crawdaddy Club in London. I told you it was a place that, it published occasionally during its early years with an exclamation point. Crawdaddy! And as Victor Borga would say, no, what is it? That's an exclamation point in Victor Borgese, but that's a whole other story. According to the New York Times, Crawdaddy was, check it out, quote from the New York Times, the first magazine to take rock and roll seriously. While the magazine's rival Rolling Stone acknowledged it as, Rolling Stone said this about it, okay, so this is going to be good for Jan, because it starts afterwards, and it's going to give some credibility to it. Rolling Stone magazine was its rival after, of course, it took away from it. It took all its, okay. It acknowledged, Rolling Stone acknowledged Crawdaddy as, quote, the first serious publication devoted to rock and roll news and criticism, unquote, preceding both Rolling Stone and a magazine called Cream, with two E's, Cream. Crawdaddy was the training ground for many rock writers just finding the language to describe rock and roll, which was only then beginning to be written about as seriously as folk music and jazz. Huh? Paul Williams, not Jan Wenner. I said the magazine spawned the career of numerous rock and other writers. That doesn't mention Jan in this, but it should, because Paul on this show mentioned that Jan worked with him on Crawdaddy. And that's where Jan got his idea. And really where he cut his teeth on this new wave at the time of serious consideration for rock music. Who else? Peter Nobler? Richard Meltzer? Remember Richard Meltzer, the stand-up comedian? Okay, right. Sandy Pearlman, John Landau. John Landau, you should know. You can find these. You can look up these things, okay? After Williams left Crawdaddy in 1968, the magazine was edited by Nobler from 1972 till its last issue in 1979. But from 1993 to 2003, Williams self-published a Crawdaddy reincarnation. That's the one. That's the one I was getting again, because I had all the Crawdaddy issues from the early years when he started it. Then he left it, and then the other guys did it and continued in rivalry with Rolling Stone. And then what into, so I was getting those, the reincarnation. It was in 2006, it was sold to Wolfgang's Vault and later resurrected as a daily webzine. And as of 2011, visits began redirecting to the music site Pace, which announced that Crawdaddy relaunches as a plan, blah, blah, as a blog, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right, and it was all gone. But let me tell you something about Paul, because this, I had not known it at the time. I was living in Leucadia, California. And I did not know at that time. I knew of Crawdaddy, and I knew of Paul Williams. All right, but I was out of that particular, I was on the outskirts of the music industry at that time, music broadcasting. I was on the outskirts, should I say? I was in another, okay, so I wasn't, involved in it as so much. I did not know this until Paul Williams was on the show, and he was on the show a number of times, okay? When he was on the show and told me where he was located when he was calling, I went, my goodness, that's like near, it's at Encinitas. It's, the other side of Del Mar and in San Diego. Indeed. I was living in the neighborhood of Paul Williams without even knowing it. How was I to know? Right? Now, Mr. Williams, look at that. He discovered Bruce Springsteen, by the way, Crawdaddy, and him. So, things like that happened. Where is it here? On the campus of ERA, he discovered it on Solia. Okay, who was Williams? Let me tell you. So he was living there in Encinitas. He was a science fiction fan who, at the age of 17, started mimeographing and distributing a collection of criticisms, at first mostly his own, about rock and roll, music, and musicians. Mimeographing. For you millennials who don't know, a mimeograph was a copy machine that was sloppy copy because it used ink and it was smudgy and it used special paper. It was a mimeograph, so you could make copies of. So you had one piece, an original piece that stuck into somewhere that you'd, and you would wind it up and go, and you would make copies. It's called mimeographing. I don't know if there's a mimeograph machine anywhere on the face of God's green earth today. He began publishing a science fiction fanzine once. It was called Within. At the age of 14, he recruited some of his fellow fans to help. Crawdaddy quickly moved from its fanzine roots to become one of the first rock music prozines. with newsstand distribution. Prozine's professional magazine. Say, and it said, here it is, you are looking at the first issue of a magazine. This is what it said. February 7, 1966. You are looking at the first issue of a magazine of rock and roll criticism. Crawdaddy will feature neither pinups nor news briefs. The specialty of this magazine is intelligent writing about pop music. That has not ended. That began there. Paul Williams said, you know what? They used to write about Shakespeare in those days. And he was just this commercial guy who did commercial plays. But they just started to take it seriously. And they wrote about it back then. And this had never been done with rock and roll, certainly not with 50s rock and roll, and early 60s not even. And the British Invasion, nobody's writing seriously about it. It was all pinups and news briefs, right? Okay, here's more about Paul things. Okay, right under Williams, okay. Greg Mitchell, featuring contributions. Listen to this. Of course, John Lennon did. Yeah, Joseph Heller, right, who wrote Catch-22, contributed. John Lennon himself contributed. Tim O'Brien, Michael Ayer, Gil Varadna, Dan Aykroyd, P.J. O'Rourke, of course, who became the very famous hip conservative guy, including columns by William S. Burroughs, Paul Krasner. Paul Krasner of The Realist. And I told you about him, too, many years ago. David Hartwell, Fire Sign Theater, and, of course, Paul Williams. While he was on the run from the law, Abby Hoffman, who I met in Canada while he was on run for the law. He had a book, he wrote a book called Steal This Book, and people were doing exactly that, right? Since he couldn't get the royalties anyway. Crawdaddy's staff included other people, right? Mitch Glazer, John Pareles, of course, notable freelance writers, also. Crawdaddy has been described as the Buffalo Springfield of the rock magazine world. Now, this is interesting because Buffalo Springfield, the musical group, which in the beginning, what, had, you know, Neil Young and Stephen Stills and Dewey Martin and names, all the names I forget. Oh, what's, you know, one of the guys who did My Mama Don't Dance, and anyway, those guys. The name of Buffalo Springfield was given to that group by Van Dyke Parks, who came on this show live before, and when no one wanted to talk to him. A lot of people didn't at the time. He has become somewhat noted and interviewed, and of course the digital platform has helped Van Dyke get along. I met Van Dyke in Los Angeles a long time ago, but Van Dyke came on to this show because Paul Williams, after he was on this show, said, you know what? You need to get on to Cotolo Chronicles. And so he did. This was opening the floodgates, if they are indeed floodgates. I guess that's a metaphor for many, many people who would never go on internet talk shows because of Paul Williams, who spread the word around. He was one of the people who helped. Of course, Chris Costello was another one. But Paul got us, got these people. He really spread the word. It meant something when it came from Paul Williams. Now, let me tell you something about Paul Williams at the time. He was not well. Paul Williams had a bicycle accident. Now, I remember riding my bike in Encinitas, in Leucadia, around there, on a bicycle, and I rode it around because it was better than a car, and because there were these wonderful hills and on the side streets past, there were like these side walks that were off the street where the cars were elsewhere, and there were some hills here and there, and there was, Paul rode his bike a lot because it saved money, and he liked to ride it, and it was good for you, okay? And Paul had a misfortunate accident, like an accident. Is there anything fortunate about an accident? He had a terrible bike accident. And he was not wearing a helmet. Nobody wore helmets in those days anyway. You know, and I don't know the nature of the accident in terms of detail. I don't know what happened, but he hurt his head badly. By the time Paul came on to Cthulhu Chronicles, while he was still trying to put together these little crawdaddy magazines and still writing well and had still written a number of books. Let me tell you something about Paul Williams. He's the only person on that side, on the side of journalism, and who Bob Dylan ever acknowledged knew what he was talking about. Now, you know, take that for what it's worth, other than the fact that, you know, Bob Dylan didn't condone books about him or things said about him, and he often screwed around with the very meanings and things just to, but Paul wrote a couple of books, and they're very good. And they explore not just opinions about certain rock poetry and what have you, meanings in a rock, as taking it seriously as literature, you know, but also encourage people to do that. And that's what literary criticism has always been and why it's always been so strong. But, you know, literary criticism is based on books and books that, you know, that's literature. But Paul did that. And throughout, let's say, look at this. This is great. Diverse mix of filmmakers, athletes, politicians, comedians, and other celebrities through the 70s, even when Paul left and did his own little thing, generated towards Crawdaddy while it was surviving and while Rolling Stone, Jan had gone over there and while he was getting his thing together big time. So there were all sorts of people that, you know, Linda Ronstadt, Bonnie Raitt, John Belushi, Jack Nicholson, Greg Allman, Muhammad Ali, Joni Mitchell, George Carlin, Randy Newman, Paul Butterfield, Roy Orbison, while Knobler was dealing with it. But of course he was, you know, the right-hand man of Paul who started the whole darn thing. There were interviews of Steve Martin, Martin Mull, Woody Allen, William Burroughs, of course, Jimmy Page, blah, 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 blah. He discovered in, the scoop about, 1972, Peter Knobler, with special assistance from Greg Mitchell, found a guy named Bruce Springsteen. Knobler's crawdaddy discovered Springsteen in the rock press and was its earliest champion. Excuse me. All right. So there you go. There was that. That's Knobler. Peter Knobler. Crawdaddy's foundation. It got as good as it could get, but he let Paul, here it is, in 1993, many years later, and we're getting close to when he had the accident, but he published 28 issues from 1993, but he couldn't stand couldn't keep up with the finances. And in 2003, he stopped. In 2006, he sold the rights to a place called Wolfgang's Vault. The magazine was relaunched as an online publication, blah, 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 blah. And then all that stuff started. And privately. Let's see if they have stuff here, too, about where it shows up. there are references to Crawdaddy in The Simpsons, season 22, episode 16. All right. There are other things here, but not. Okay, it says, you know, personal stuff. I don't know when it happened, but Paul was in this horrible accident. Of course, the horrible accident. I know you say he was in an accident. I guess it could be a minor or not, but this was major, and he had trouble. He didn't lose a lot of his senses, but he had to work his way back to full consciousness. And he never really got all the way back. When he was on this show, he spoke very slowly, calculated. And in the beginning, when I didn't know about the accident, and it happened in our neighborhood where we were both living. I don't know exactly when, but you know, I didn't know. It was him who told me and talked about it on this show. And that's why I'm saying what I could have done, but I didn't do, because I had no time to do it, was to find some of those shows as they are archived in my personal. So I don't think you can't go to Juice Talk and find those Paul Williams shows. But here, they may be here. Remember, a lot of the shows were not recorded back in those days because we didn't have the power, the gigs, the facility, the RAM gigs and the gig RAMs and stuff. We didn't have them. But, he had told us, and I'd noticed, I had said to my wife at the time, I said, he speaks so slowly and calculated, like he was thinking of every word, every adjective, where to put every, I didn't know it was this much of a strain for him to communicate. And yet, he had, his faculties were there. His expression machine was slow and had to work at a very strange speed for radio, for audio in general. And I didn't realize he was debilitated at that point, and that he was indeed ill-fated at the time, because there was no way he was going to get better. Now, if I look at Paul Williams on Wikipedia, I may find, and I'm going to, he says music journalist. 1948, died in 2013. Personal life, death. Here we go. Book says editor. Oh, because I'll have some of his books first. Let's see if I can get through this thing first. Where is he? Personal life. Okay, what have you. Here you go. In 2009, he was living in Encinitas, California, with his son and a Cindy Lee Berryhill, a singer. He eventually had to enter a nursing home due to dementia. He was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. And he was not that old, okay, because he was, what was he, 64 when he died or what have you? Well, I don't know, find out. He had Alzheimer's disease, the early onset of which was attributed to a brain injury he sustained in a 1995 bicycle accident. The medical bills were enormous. And I told you, we used to have, when he was he couldn't be on anymore because he couldn't talk anymore. And he was not necessarily a vegetable, but he wasn't doing well. And he wasn't able to. And he had Alzheimer's, so he was forgetting things and not working well and dealing with, he couldn't be on. Obviously before he went to the nursing industry, the nursing home, he was on the show here. So his Alzheimer's was attributed to this brain injury and a bicycle accident. The medical bills were enormous. And as I said, that's where I got to that. I told you we had drives here. We didn't do a telethon, but we had drives to send him, money, and people did. And we were very happy about that. Whoever contributed to help him, he was accepted for Medi-Cal, which was Medicaid coverage, and that helped him a bit because it was 2009. He lived till 2013. He was 64. Complications related to the bicycle accident, not necessarily the Alzheimer's. His official website said he suffered a traumatic brain injury in a bicycle accident, leading to the early onset of dementia and a steady decline to a point where he now, at that time, requires full-time care. The burden on his immediate family had been immense. Yes, it had been. And he passed away. Don't worry about what we did. Jan Wenner, no matter what, would never come on this show. And many of the people associated with Rolling Stone wouldn't come on this show. Paul got Van Dyke to come on the show, and that led open a lot of other people who said, well, you know, if he did it, if Williams did it and Parks did it, we will do it, to where we had, along with Chris Costello, as I said, we had a lot of people coming on the show who never would have associated with internet broadcasting, but things were changing, and those people allowed us because, and that, part of that, of course, was because when you know, this Cotolo guy had been in radio, so they gave me the benefit of the doubt, having been a professional in the industry, so they came on. Still, you know, they didn't have to remember. Even though they knew that about me from the beginning, no one was running over to internet broadcasting to be on there. No way. Here's some of the books. Now, the first book, 1969's Outlaw Blues, A Book of Rock Music, is, you know, you don't have to be, and I don't think you should be, you baby boomers, but you millennials, and you Generation X, and, you know, the ones I talked about when I did that show, I've forgotten already the categories. You can still get Outlaw Blues. You could go to, Amazon. It's probably the people probably selling used copies for, you know, matter of cents. And, you could probably get a good copy, on an eBay auction. That's what you guys should be reading in terms of like, well, what was it about back then? Go there. Time Between, 1972. Das Energy, 73, wrote two books. Pushing Upward and Das Energy. Apple Bay in 1976. Coming in 1977. Right to Pass. Heart of Gold. He really got into Neil Young. And I never imagined that could be done. But apparently a lot of people take Neil Young and have taken Neil Young a lot more seriously than I have. 1979, Bob Dylan, What Happened? Is the book that Bob Dylan approached Paul with and said, you got it. And it deals with a lot of what happened when Bob Dylan went into, what was he, how do you call, what do you say, he became born again, that's it, when he was born again. Paul Williams described what this meant, and he was right, while everyone was completely confused. And Dylan acknowledged Paul. Paul talked about that on this show when no one was listening to him, still listening to him. They were buying the books or what have you, you know. But he was not selling, you know, millions of books. He was getting along. And he had pretty much, you know, when he gave up Crawdaddy, whatever money he made for that, he went on and he wanted to do these books. He wrote a great book about the Beach Boys. Is it here? Where is it? He wrote a couple of other Dylan ones. Where's that? Here, Brian Wilson, Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, How Deep is the Ocean, 1997. Now, those of you out there who may be thinking, and of course, as I said, we had Van Dyke on, and he talked a lot about the Beach Boys and his association, but, you know, a lot of people thinking about, oh, that, especially you millennials and generation people who might be, what is that? What's with that? You know, the Beach Boys were just, you know, the kids on the beach and singing about surfing and stuff like that. Meanwhile, you know, baby boomers are going all over the world to watch, Brian Wilson still recording, and Beach Boys have, you know, broken up and gotten together and there's a bunch of junk or whatever. But this book is terrific. Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, How Deep is the Ocean, 1997. Because no one looked at that as, and Van Dyke's, of course, Van Dyke got involved with the Beach Boys. He's the last thing you would think about in terms of, hear his lyrics and know what's going on with that, surfing and girls and, you know, all that Mike Love crap. Three other books about Bob Dylan. You know, I really liked Watching the River Flow. So when you read these things, you millennials and you pre-millennials, who are the pre-millennials? I have no idea. What am I talking about? Those? The pre-millennials? No, the pre-millennials. I forget, Generation X, Generation Z, whatever the generations may be. And he continued to write, this is really good. Bob Dylan Performing Artists, Volume 1, Bob Dylan Performing Artists, Volume 2, The Middle Years. Because he understood the folk music, so he understood the roots of Dylan and that whole beat poetry and all the stuff that happened, why it all changed and where it came from. Literature, it came from literature. And so he was able to do that even to look into the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson with great, depth. I say depth. There is depth there. Not just lyric wise, because there's not much lyric wise actually. It's cute and it fits on some of those very early things or before there's a Van Dyke or anybody else that, Brian Wilson was, collaborating. With whom he was collaborating, but there's also the music, which people did not take seriously itself, which was not as simple-minded as a lot of people thought back then, just because it was associated with surfing and whatever. And they were called the Beach Boys, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Dylan, on the other hand, with the performing artist thing is fascinating because, and remember, we were talking about, and we played you Give Peace a Chance because Paul is in that video, and because he was connected to that whole scene. I mean, not everybody got into that Montreal hotel room. You had to be, and Lennon knew him, and everybody knew of him because he was starting. Once he started doing this writing, everybody got into it. So he was writing. He put his finger on the pulse of that and found it. That's good. Paul, may you rest in peace. He also edited some books, the International Bill of Human Rights, which had a foreword by, who I mentioned before, Jimmy Carter. So, let's see, there's tons of stuff about him and everything. You could find him on Wikipedia. But there are the archives of Crawdaddy Magazine. And, oh wow, external links? Yes. Let me go to external links, and I think it's there somewhere. You could find Crawdaddy Online, the official site. You could find these. So go to Paul Williams. Don't get him confused with the guy, who wrote Rather Be in Spain, or If I Was in Spain, You'd Have Three Dogs, or Sleeping. That guy, that Paul Williams, a short guy who became the head of ASCAP, or the music industry. The short guy. He was in the movies with Smokey and the Bandit and those things. With another guy, with a comedian, the big comedian guy. Let's not get too deeply into that. From a long time ago. Everything with you is a long time ago, Frank. So you can go there, and, you could find out a lot about him. And I really am I emphasize to be people who are not baby boomers. Now, okay, you guys who are members of the generation from whence I grew, from whence I grow up to be a man. You can go to, if you haven't read these books, you should be. If you haven't read them or know of them or read about them, you have been influenced by this guy. And yet, the stories about Jan Wenner, the stories about Rolling Stone, and there's no mention, or is there? I'm not going to buy the book Sticky Fingers, the biography of Jan Wenner, and read 100 pages about his connection with John Lennon and whatever that did for Rolling Stone. I don't care. And it's not as important as this, because, again, roots, my friends, roots. It's like if you listen, people who are listening to the Beach Boys in the time when they were just doing these beautiful harmonies, the people, the generation listening to the Beach Boys, didn't know the Four Freshmen. And if you listen to the Four Freshmen, you go, it is the Beach Boys. Listen to that harmony. These roots, everyone coming from somewhere, okay, and your generation, whatever generation you have been in since, generations began? Did I say that? I don't believe I said that. The point is, you know, not the generation that exists in their teens and 20s is not delivering or presenting pure originality. The roots are what matters. And when you see, when you hear it, when you find out, it's fascinating because that's pop culture. That's neo-postmodernism. How people took the works of other artists, and by artists I cover the great spectrum of writers, poets, reviewers, journalists, everything, and how they filtered what they had to say in different styles and different approaches. And when you talk of Paul Williams, you talk about the guy who said, this is, look, imagine that. No one, when he's at Swarthmore, and he goes, I got an idea. Here's the idea. He talked more quickly then. Because I'm laughing at him, believe me. He became a very good friend and a very important element. Not just for me, mind you, in, because, you know, it's not like I, you know, soared to heights of fame and fortune because he helped open up the portal for mainstream people to come on radio shows that were done over the internet, no less. It's not because of that. But the entire internet changed from that. And you know that because later, as more people appeared on various internet talk shows and or interviews, as they were acknowledging the internet as a broadcasting reality, that side that wanted nothing to do with the internet was realizing that we were here. And it was something they had to deal with eventually. It gave a legitimate, not that we were illegal or that we are illegal now, but it gave a legitimacy to something that was just meh, kicked aside like a can. Kicking cans down, kicking it down the road. Kicking it down the road. Kicking it down the road. You see what I'm saying? The name is Paul Williams. And you will always be remembered. And there's no reason why you still can't read them and understand what's going on or how things came about or what have you. No reason. And I will do some research to find out if he's mentioned at all in Jan Wenner's book by John Hogan, whatever his name. I already put the magazine aside. Whoever, you know, I'm almost sure he's got to be mentioned in there somewhere. I mean, you can't just roll over it. But you see what I'm saying? Even Rolling Stone has roots that are in its own generation. It started somewhere, and I just don't like the fact that Jan Wenner gets so much credit. And I'm so happy that there is a quote there somewhere that acknowledges the importance of Crawdaddy, and that you could still see it somehow, because thank goodness the internet has ways of just storing junk like me and all this stuff that goes on, then you could go back. And there's a Crawdaddy online for whatever. I don't know. Go and find it. There's an external link here. It says Paul Williams on MySpace. Not so. unbelievable that it would just sit there and no one would do it, especially now. The Rolling Stone will be sold. And that's the end of it. I don't think they're going to sell it to somebody who's going to, I may be wrong, but remember, everything's gone online. Everything's gone online. Everything's gone digital. No more. Well, there's more, what have you. I didn't have time. Anyway, Paul Williams, you know the name. You heard some of the story here. Wake up, it's night. Okay? We did not hear from Maquette, but maybe we will next week. Our Thanksgiving evening digest with me, and I believe maybe even Tom Savino, if he's going to be on Thanksgiving. And his show, Sivino Veritas, follows in a matter of minutes, my friends. And you are my friends. But I didn't have time to get into a couple of other things, including the fact that it was a philosophy day. When was that? Is philosophy week? Well, it's going to be over anyway. That's just why I don't get philosophical about that, but it's going to be over anyway. And and remember, you could go. I hate to say that. See, I got to stop myself. Stop saying remember. So there's this. What do I use in its place? I don't know if you know what Paul Williams looks like. So if I give, and I told you, hey, go see that Give Peace a Chance video, the official video from 1969 on YouTube, and you'll see Paul there. You know, if you don't know what he looks like, you ain't gonna see him. These kooky glasses. He doesn't really look like, the original nerd, in a way. Thick glasses. And, he's a crazy little looking guy. And I got news for you. Most of the people in that, video, if you watch it, they're all tripping out. They're all tripping. They're all on acid. Now, like that matters, right? No, it doesn't. My name is Frank Catolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. That in itself doesn't matter, but we continue to move on as we do. What else do I have to tell you? Has to do with all the other stuff that I always tell you. The books are on Amazon. The digital books are on Amazon. Go to Frank Catolo. Buy some of those books. Buy them all. Put them in your Kindle or your, now I don't even think you have to do that. You just anything. You can get a Kindle app. You know, there was a time when that's how this thing changes. This format changes. When this started and when the books were being written came out, there was like, you had to have a Kindle, literally had to have a machine. And there were certain HTML things and the programs that made a book a Kindle book. You could only see it on a Kindle machine. Right? And then there was another one. What was it called? Chromebooks? I don't even know the name of the other, type. What was it? I don't know. There was another type. Now, but this is the point I'm making here, okay? Now, you just download the book and you read it on anything. Your phone, your iPhone, your smartphone is my goodness, what a machine, what a machine. You can read on there anything. These books are all inexpensive and digital, you know, and it does, in essence, it helps keep this show going because every penny that comes in that I put into various things like how about, you know, I'm on the server, sure, SRN takes care of a lot of stuff, but you know, I gotta pay for cable stuff too. I got electricity, you know, you don't just pay for the cable connection and all the taxes and all the junk that goes on with that, right? You also pay for, you got your electricity, it uses electricity. And, right? It's like, you know, when the digital thing started, someone should have said, buy stocks in batteries, pen light, little extra, small AA, AA, AAAs, you know, buy it because there are stores now that just have batteries and people who have, and everybody has digital stuff, gets batteries. And the recharging. And electricity is recharging, right? Recharge your phone and stuff, right? What is that doing? Electricity. Batteries. Today there was, I forgot the name of it, but I saw an ad for a little contraption. It said for seniors. Making digital technology easy. So you could get, you know, like a Skype thing, like it's like a phone. So you could, if you're an older person and you have kids out there somewhere, grandkids or whatever, or friends or enemies or whatever, you can talk to them very simply. So it's another contraption, a gadget, as they call it. I said contraption, a gadget where older people can use and say, well, this is marvelous, as opposed to getting on the phone. Who has landlines anymore? I do, but like, it's an old other story. How much do I use a landline? Sheesh. My name is Frank Catolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. We told you about Amazon and blurb.com, where you can get Molotov Memoirs and more Molotov Memoirs, either in the very expensive analog version or digitally, which is cheaper. And you still get the great, and I don't know how, I can't find any more accolades for T. Stephen Gesick's art and how he's put together those books. Beautiful. They complement every story, and every story is as crazy as the next. So there's that. And Lulu.com, where there are also digital. And you could buy the papers, but, you know, I don't know who wants anything anymore. I just don't know. I'm only trying to, you know, move along in this digital. It's the technology that brought us together. Now, isn't it? Godfather of internet radio and all that stuff. Enough about me. Let's talk about other things. For most of you stations listening, Tom Savino and Savino Veritas follows immediately. Go get the books. Go do what you got to do. You can get in touch with me on Facebook or Twitter at Frank Cotolo, and where? fcotolo@yahoo.com. If you want to write to me. Thank you, all you people who've been writing in. And we take your names, but we don't send them out to anyone. What we do is we say hello and talk to you, and we send you things, and you'll be wonderful. It'll all be wonderful. Stay healthy, get wealthy, and good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you may be located. Oh, yes. Time to go once again, because I have nothing more to say.